Soycles.
United States is for Fig Newton. It was named after Newton, Massachusetts.
Oh.
I haven't had a Fig Newton in a really long time.
It's because they're bad cookies.
Man, you're really downing on a lot of things that I like this morning. Jeez, don't yuck my yum.
Don't what?
Don't yuck my yum.
Got it.
Moving Wisconsin forward, one joke at a time, this is Kristen Bry with As Goes Wisconsin.
Yada, yada, yada.
Hello, Wisconsin!
Hello, Wisconsin! Welcome to the 11 o'clock hour of As Goes Wisconsin. I am your host, Kristen Bry. Got Jane Matinere, Fig Newton hater. And apparently, Maggie Dawn, Fig Newton lover. Of the Maggie Dawn Show.
I was so offended, Jane. You know how much I love and admire you. You're like my freaking radio hero. And then to hear you bash my Newton. I was like, get off the Fig Newton.
I was
Newton.
So surprised when she said that.
It's not a cookie. It's a Fig Newton. First of all.
It's still bad.
How do you figure, like, first of all, you can't ever eat a stale Fig Newton.
Is that true?
Oh, yeah.
They're just
not as good. You want the cakey part cakey. You want the jammy part jammy. You don't want any like crusty ends on that sucker. And you want a nice glass of Wisconsin-made 2% milk. That is like bringing me back. Oh, that's some good stuff. I love a Newton.
I love a Newton too. It's like it's flavorful.
It's a punish.
Do you like a strawberry shortcake bread?
No.
Do you just not like fruit with your pastries?
It's a punishment.
Do you eat a cherry
Danish? She
likes
bacon when her scones. So that's if that gives you any indication of...
I can get behind that, like a good apricot jam and like bacon on a scone. Like that's sweet and salty, delicious. We can talk about food for an hour, Kristen.
We have so many different angles we can go. So many different.
I always tell people I didn't get this curvy looking at my plate of food.
All right, so you teased a story.
Sure did.
About something that was found in a 2,000-year-old tomb.
Yeah. So, scientists say, this is from the Washington Post on the 27th, so yesterday, say they have solved the mystery of a 2,000-year-old grave that has intrigued archaeologists for more than two decades. Here's the thing. It's an Iron Age grave, first discovered in 1999. Quote, the most richly furnished burial chamber found in the area, a tiny island off the southwestern tip of England containing several metal objects. A bronze mirror, a sword, jewels. It was very sort of bedazzled, if you will, for an Iron Age burial site. And so it seemed because of the archaeological things that were found there that it indicated a warrior, and there were things like a sword and a shield that indicate likely a male warrior.
Okay.
But also they found a mirror, which from that time sometimes indicates a female burial site. So they were very confused about this. Because again, it was the regalia of a soldier. And just to remind everyone, if you close your eyes and you put on your grade school, like middle school history lesson thinking caps, yeah, the Iron Age was when there were like bloody hand-to-hand violent combat.
Yeah, it's like it's Game of Thrones, but in real life.
Yeah.
It's the 100-year war.
Turned up a lot. Right. Especially on the tip of this tiny little island off the coast of England, right? Like probably one of the most violent zones in the world at that time. So they eventually were able to extract DNA. They couldn't come to any conclusions about it for 20, 25 years because there wasn't enough DNA. Well, science has now advanced far enough that there were some teeth and that the nature of what our teeth are composed of, actually they're able to extract a more complete DNA sequence. And lo and behold, this badass is a woman that was buried.
Wow.
Wow.
And they're kind of like, holy cow, does that sort of change some understandings that if you had a female warrior that probably was leading things because of the fact that there's this sword and a shield and this mirror and then all of this sort of bedazzlement, she was probably commanding troops and had probably distinguished herself in battle. And so the idea that this was going on 2,000 years ago and not only did all those things to such a level of notoriety that when she died, and they put her age somewhere between like 20 to 25, when she died, people cared so much about her that they wanted to honor her this way in her burial. And so, like, in this moment of Barbie and sort of fourth wave feminism and understanding all of these things, it resonated so much so to me because, yes, not only have women rocked and rocked for all millennia and all of history, they have always been those that when poo is hitting the fan in the most extreme ways, you will find women there getting it done and getting it done on the battlefield, too. So to me, the other resonating part of this was history matters, how we teach it, how we tell it, how we remember it. And the parts of it that we choose to ignore matter probably more than the parts that are written down.
And who gets to tell it?
Correct. And here, yet again, we're reminded of that, that history is often incomplete. It's told by one perspective most often. That's why what Ron DeSantis in Florida is doing is so dangerous. Like, slavery was not helpful to anyone, you ass. So I just immediately was like,
well, it was helpful to some people.
Well,
it was not helpful to the people, the enslaved people.
Correct.
It was very helpful to the people who had free labor.
Well, that's the meta, right, Kristen? Like, when we're telling stories, ask yourself who benefits from the story being told in this way. And oh yes, now we understand why the story is told that way.
Well, it's so interesting because I think about that, like, you know, we joked at the last segment of there's so much news. And so even those, all of us who, our job is to scour the news, decide what we want to talk about, we can't, right? Like, there's too many things. I didn't hear that story that you said. And it's the same thing with history. You can't just fill the history books with everything. And so there's editors and there's publishers and there's people who get to decide what the curriculum is and what stories get told. In the same way the publishers of our news for the day decide what makes the front page and what gets buried and what gets covered at all. And so it's like having a critical eye and having media literacy is so important to, like, this is true, but also what is not being told.
100%. And the views, the biases, whether explicit and known to the publisher, to the decider of what information gets repeated and told and taught and elevated, like, all of that deeply matters. So it was interesting as I read that, I was like, well, there's two ways I could connect that to another random story, and I'll actually give you both, Kristen.
Perfect.
So in the spirit of women rock and women as, like, warrior queens, I thought it was really cool that some of the below-the-surface stuff that happened in the U.S. women's national team's tie with the Netherlands was really cool because there was this on-pitch collision between the captain of the U.S. team and this woman from the Netherlands, and they actually play together for a team from France, like in their normal everyday professional soccer careers. And apparently, like, these two had, like, some words, but they're friends and teammates. And then the U.S. national captain came out, like, really angry and didn't go target her female opponent, didn't go take her out, just went back onto the field and scored a goal.
I know. I love that. Was that, I was at Nomad on Brady
watching
with, like, 100 some people. Oh, speaking of that, as of right now, from viewing, Milwaukee is the largest viewership of the Women's World Cup so far for the first two games.
We are such a great sports area of viewership. People love it. We love all of it. People watch golf. That's fabulous. And then the last little piece of that I thought was so cool and, like, women as warrior queens that really resonated was after the game, the two were, like, making fun of each other.
They're hugging.
Like, poking each other. Yes. And I was like, ladies, this is how it's done. Yeah. And I don't need to address that to ladies. Men, this is how we do. And it harkened back to the women's NCAA championship.
That's exactly where I was going to go next.
And, like, that was healthy competition. And these women, like, sharing hand gestures and how genderized and racialized the coverage of that got. It's like, what's the story that's told on top of the exact same facts? And to me, I was like, I love the fact that those two women were going at it in the NCAA. I was like, heck yeah.
Well, and the best take I found on that story specifically with Caitlin Clark, and I'm losing the Louisiana's player's name.
Someone that's listening to us, help us out. Yeah. I can't remember.
But it was like the fact is, like, these women, these are two of the best
female
college basketball players. They will play the rest of their careers with and against each other.
Yes.
And this will be one story in their long careers that they laugh about.
Correct.
And it's not a big deal. And so I think that's the thing. It's like, I still think it's unusual People are still getting used to seeing women compete in this level. Yeah. And we're used to seeing it as the framework of like catfights.
Yes.
And manipulative mean girl BS.
Yes.
Versus like, oh no, we can be confrontational and get over it quickly.
And I think women actually are much better at that. Like my experience in the workplace is that I often have the most productive conflict or productive disagreement with women.
Hmm.
Now that's not a universal experience, but especially if I'm dealing with a woman that has equal power, leverage, access, whatever. It's like, well, I totally disagree. Let's talk about this, blah, blah, blah. Yeah, okay, our both of our ideas are better now because we had this disagreement. And like, men, like, feelings are hurt and toes are stepped on and who are you to be telling me? Like, all that stuff. Huh.
That's really funny because I've heard similar things of, like, women writing room, like, the writer's rooms.
Yes, writer's rooms.
And where the funniest joke wins if a woman is in the head.
Correct.
And that, like, the collaboration that can happen is we're trying to get to the best sketch versus an individual's idea winning.
Correct. Because, like, I don't care if it was my idea or your idea. Like, if we can all pitch in and make that idea better, then it's collectively owned. And that's one of the things that, like, as a manager, as a leader of people, if I'm trying to persuade someone, if I'm taking ownership over ideas and things, like, that doesn't help anybody have buy-in.
Yeah.
And for us to feel, like, kumbaya team mentality, the problem, the thing that we're fighting isn't each other. It's like we're fighting the bad ideas, the unfunny stuff, the thing that lacks in substance or whatever that is. Yeah, my experience absolutely supports that insight, right? It goes really well when women are in the room.
Which is why we need more women in our rooms. As the three female hosts on Civic Media right now, which is better than other talk radio stations.
Yes, it is.
Not
to name names, but we're doing better. We're trying to recruit more.
Yeah, if I have to listen to those two guys on that one station talk about any more crap.
And I have no idea which one you're talking about because
there's so many to pick from.
All right, well, we're going to take another break. Maggie Dawn will still be here when we come back. This is As Goes Wisconsin. She's the best girl I ever had. As Goes Wisconsin. I am Kristen Bry. She is Jane Matinere. We're here with Maggie Dawn. And just a reminder, we are going to play the state fair game again. We're going to play at the end of the show.
Yes.
So at 11:50, if you want to win some state fair tickets and categorize some food that you would devour, eat for the rest of your life, or banish to the depths of hell, we will be doing that at 11:50. And at the next segment, Matt Miller is here going to be with for his pop culture update. And, of course, we're going to talk about his reviews of Barbie and Oppenheimer.
Barbenheimer.
Maggie, have you seen either of those movies yet?
I have not. I tend to sometimes sort of ostrich myself, put my head in the ground to, like, tune out buzz on stuff so that when I have time to get around to seeing it, I can consume it and make my own judgments about things.
That's very mature.
Because I've been so busy. I was sort of like, oh, this thing's happening and it's Greta Gerwig and like super cool. And I used to think Barbie was lame because she looked like an alien with no genitalia and whatever. Like my mom would buy me dolls.
And never a doll person?
Well, this is what I'd do with them. I'd like dress them up exactly as they were supposed to look on the box and be like, well, I'm done now. What do I do? And I like put them on the shelf. And I was like, You mean I'm supposed to, like, don't I win? Like, it's exactly like it looks on the box, right? That, which tells you all you need to know about my type A, you know, like, not super creative.
Didn't play much.
No.
Just, like, it looks good. This
yeah,
is what
this
I'm
is
supposed
good.
To do.
I won, right? I get an A.
It's finished now.
Correct.
You're like, give me another project.
Yeah, give me those Lincoln Logs. Let me go build something.
I have not seen it yet. I'm seeing Barbie tomorrow. I don't know. We're going to see Oppenheimer, but I don't know when, but
very cool.
I'm a little behind on the, I'm the opposite of you. I have seen and received so much of the zeitgeist of it,
yes.
of the narrative around people's thoughts about it. I'm certainly not going in as a blank slate, but I don't care.
Well, and you've been looking forward to this for a long time.
Well, it's specifically because it's a feminist movie.
Right.
And some of the feedback as far as, like, I think people taking kids to it, it's not a kids movie. As far as, maybe it is visually just because it is so pink and it is so, but, like, the jokes, the message is layered in our relationship with feminism, with womanism, with dolls and all this stuff. So I as someone who was a gender studies major, I'm very excited about this.
Well, to me, there's a lot of different art forms that can be viewed at various different age and maturity levels, and you're going to see and understand the material in different ways.
Mm-hmm.
Like, if you come from a fourth wave feminist frame and you've studied this, like, you're going to pick up on all of these things that are layered apparently into this movie. If you're a 10-year-old girl, you may come away with the overall sensibility that I don't need a man and I can do whatever I want.
Mm-hmm.
No wonder the GOP hates this movie.
Hates it.
The Christian right is, like, losing its mind. That's what I've picked up is that.
And Ben Shapiro burning Barbies, apparently, now.
Honestly, some of the comments I've seen, what was my favorite one? The feminist agenda is going to destroy us all.
Wasn't it something like intersectional?
Intersectionality
was.
Feminism,
Jane. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But I was like, I don't know what Yellowstoning is, though.
What is it?
I can't remember what it was. I Googled it and it came up with Yellowstone National Park. So
of course, right.
No. Angel Reese was the name that we were thinking of before, as far as the LSU
we're giving you
superstar.
Snaps, Angel Reese. So beautiful. I loved it. Yeah.
All right. Well, what was, before we have to let you go, any final topic that you want
to? So my other tie to finding this 2,000-year-old tomb of the female goddess warrior and what it says about how we teach and understand things was, of course, let's talk about Florida banning books in elementary schools. And everybody remembers the little friendly Arthur series of books.
Like Arthur
Yeah.
It's a show, too.
Yeah. Isn't he like an aardvark or something?
Yeah.
Arthur the aardvark.
Like about as harmless and lovely and warm fuzzies as you can possibly get. Well, not in Clay County, Florida.
Oh, God.
Clay County School District Library Media Services Manual discusses how challenged materials have to be presented. Well, this weirdo filed a complaint and challenged Arthur's birthday. Protect children. It is not appropriate to discuss spin the bottle with elementary school children. So there is a reference in the birthday. He's figuring out who to invite. And it was kind of like, well, invite all these different people and we'll play spin the bottle. Now, if a child reads that and they haven't been to a boy and girl party where spin the bottle connotes maybe kissing someone else, it wouldn't have any meaning other than like a reference to this game. But there's this, he goes off on this total rant. He goes, not okay for K-5 kids. I was like, how many 5-year-olds do you know that are like, oh yeah, I can read Arthur without assistance right now. They're 5-year-olds.
Yeah.
And how many 5-year-olds would know what spin the bottle is? To me, there's so much projection of adult understandings of sexuality onto children's materials. It's like, you weirdos, stop putting your own sexuality in the middle of the discussion of early childhood educational material.
Well, and that's what I wonder when Pixar movies, because like in all the best kids movies of the last 15 or 20 years, there's been two levels, right?
There's adult themes in there too.
It's like adult themes, it's adult jokes that just go right
SpongeBob.
Over. Yeah. And
you
like,
want to have a good time, you get stoned, you watch SpongeBob at home, you will laugh your butt off, and not a single kid would ever understand any of the nuance. I mean, we could talk about SpongeBob. Like, what's exactly going on in that underwater universe there? Right? Like, it just give me a break. And by the way, this is the same state where a similar nutbag banned Amanda Gorman's poem.
I know.
It's just, we have lost our ever-loving senses. We have lost the plot.
All right, Maggie Dawn, we have to let you go. I hope you have an excellent vacation day. You've earned it. We are so happy to have you as our friend, as our colleague. Listen to the Maggie Dawn Show Monday through Thursday, 6 p.m. to 7 p.m. And call in. She'll take all your calls. She even takes CJ's calls, which we don't do anymore.
I do. And then I cut his butt off.
All right, we'll be back with Matt Miller after the break. This is As Goes Wisconsin. Wisconsin. I am Kristen Bry. She is Jane Nutnair, and it's that time of the month when we welcome Matt Miller, culture editor for On Milwaukee, to give us a pop culture update. And I think it's pretty obvious what we're going to talk about this week. It has to be Barbenheimer, because I'm assuming you have thoughts, Mr.
What?
Matt
we're
Miller.
Not talking about the Haunted Mansion movie?
Is that out yet?
I have 15 pages of Disney's Haunted Mansion to talk about. Let's talk Barbenheimer.
Before that, how are you doing?
I'm great. I am broadcasting live from East Lansing right now.
You sound great.
That's great. I'm glad to hear it. Holiday Inn Wi-Fi. You're doing great. We are on the Miller Boys annual baseball trip, so we are seeing some exciting professional. We saw the Shohei Ohtani show last night, which was quite the show.
If you
get a chance to see him live, highly recommend it. He lives up to the hype.
All right. Well, which one, what did you do the double feature? Did you see them back to back?
I did not do the official Barbenheimer. And I will say this, I don't think people should do the Barbenheimer double feature. Have both of you, have you seen either of the movies yet?
No, I'm seeing Barbie tomorrow, and then we may see Oppenheimer Sunday. We're trying to figure out when we can see Oppenheimer, but I don't have time to do two movies back to back these days.
Part of it is it's a 5-hour double feature at minimum, because I mean Oppenheimer is 3 hours long, tip to tail, and Barbie is still 2 hours long, so it's a long day. But also, these are dense movies. Oppenheimer has a lot on its mind. Barbie, for a movie that is fun and light and, you know, based on a Mattel toy, has a lot on its mind. These are movies that afterwards you want to sit down and talk about them and, you know, have a drink over them. You don't want to immediately get ushered into a new theater and reset your brain. I think I would highly recommend either seeing one or the other. I recommend seeing both. They're both really good movies. But Oppenheimer is going to be on my top 10 at the end of the year. Barbie, I really enjoyed that. It's a really fun time, really thoughtful time. Ryan Gosling really going for it in that movie.
Do you think the hype is real that he could get nominated for an Oscar for this movie?
It'll be a hard thing to pull off, because the Oscars famously do not respect comedy. And Ryan Gosling's role is distinctly comedy. There is no real like dramatic. There's no like moment where you can be like, look, he's really trying to have a big dramatic moment. He's so sincere in the movie. It's like he's waited his whole life to play Ken the doll. But he plays it great. But I have a hard time seeing, you know, the Oscars being like, we're going to nominate this important serious actor, this important serious performance, this important serious performance, and Ryan Gosling as Ken. Like, I don't think he even got nominated for, he barely got nominated for La La Land. And that was their favorite movie of that year.
Yeah. But, because when has it, because Melissa McCarthy was nominated for Bridesmaids, right?
Yes, but it's very rare.
It's very, very rare. Like, it happens every once in a while. I'm trying to think of other off the top of my
head. And it's also Renee Zellweger got nominated for Bridget Jones's Diary. Yeah. Robert Downey Jr. got nominated for Tropic Thunder. But those were kind of special circumstances.
We don't talk about that very much.
Yeah, Tropic Thunder came out at exactly the moment it could come out and at no time after. But yeah, the interesting thing, I mean, the interesting thing about that nomination is that that year they didn't care about the rest of the nominations because that was the Heath Ledger and Dark Knight year. So best supporting actor, it was Heath Ledger and I don't know, do whatever you want for the rest of the nominees. So a comedy could sneak in there and maybe something like that will happen this year where there's a performance where it's like, oh, that guy's winning, doesn't even matter. And then voters get a little bit more creative, a little bit more like, oh, like we can throw in somebody interesting like a Ryan Gosling in Barbie. I do think you're going to see it get nominated for some Oscars though, especially in the production design area in the like. Watching that movie is outstanding. Like, it is just delightful to watch a movie with that much color, that much kind of set design. It's remarkable. And it only cost $100 million to make, which for Hollywood budgets nowadays is chump change.
Well, and it's interesting. Like, does it... Like, Greta Gerwig has not missed yet. Does, like... I feel like that's not talked about enough as far as how... Like, she started as an actress, if I'm correct, like, actress, kind of writer. And, like, debut film was Lady Bird, and then Little Women, and now this. And so, like, how rare is that, male or female, to have a writer-director who just, her learning curve was like, nope, never mind, I've arrived from the get-go.
Well, she had done a lot of stuff in the kind of indie core scene. She had worked with a lot of the Duplasses. You were cutting out a little, you might have already said that. But yeah, I mean, she is, I mean, when it comes to mainstream directorial debuts, writer, director, she's 2 for 2 on Best Picture nominations.
Right.
She's incredible. And that's kind of, that's what we kind of hope the lesson is from Barbenheimer this past weekend, is the hope is that Hollywood will see this and say that writers and directors and performers are what you should be investing in. This is what got people excited to go to the movies last weekend. It wasn't a Barbie movie. A Barbie movie would have made fine money, but a Greta Gerwig Barbie movie starring Ryan Gosling and Greta and Margot Robbie, that got people excited. It got people thinking maybe this isn't just going to be a brand movie. And same with Oppenheimer. An Oppenheimer movie makes no money without Christopher Nolan.
Yeah.
That movie doesn't exist. It doesn't get made. It certainly isn't 3 hours long. And it certainly doesn't make $80 million in its opening weekend. The hope is that they see this and they're like, okay, we got to invest in stars and in writers, directors who have a creative vision that gets people excited to go to theaters. And we need to back those visions. But Mattel has already announced that they're making a Polly Pocket movie with Emily from Paris, written and directed by Lena Dunham, which, like, doesn't feel like they quite grasped what we liked about, you know, this movie. I mean,
I'm kind of intrigued
by the Lena Dunham side of it.
It's, I didn't know almost Lena Dunham there, was still doing stuff. But also, that's like a name I haven't heard in a little bit.
A Polly Pocket movie now from this? Like, is this, was this the dream of Barbenheimer?
Well, I saw that. Did you see I was going to talk about this and then Maggie stuck around, but did you see that today on Apple Plus, a Beanie Baby movie is coming out?
Yeah, I'm tired of movies about things getting made.
Yeah.
Like, we had the Flamin' Hot Cheetos movie. We've had the Air Jordan movie. I just cannot. I don't need to see products getting paid anymore.
We also had Blackberry.
Like, we had the Tetris movie.
We also had Tetris. There was a pinball machine that was actually very good. The pinball movie was good. I forgot exactly what that one was called. But that was more about how pinball used to be illegal.
Like, it's like somebody watched... Yeah, that's almost interesting. But it's like everybody watched History Channel's How Stuff Gets Made. And they're like, we need to make movies out of all of this. And we really don't. The How the Stuffs Get Made on History Channel works fine enough on its own.
So going back to your point as far as because what I find so interesting of Barbenheimer, because I saw your tweet saying the exact thing that you just said, as far as like what the lesson should be is that you invest in talent, you invest in writers, you invest in directors, you invest in mm-hmm. stars, and that it is that it's not just big superhero movies that can have incredible opening weekends. People want good movies. They want good stories. And simultaneously, this is happening with the first time the writers and actors have been striking since 1960. And do you have faith that the studios will hear that that will be what they take away from this versus the things that we've been hearing is like, we're going to bleed them dry. Like, we will wait them out until they lose their houses.
I revert you back to my Polly Pocket movie, the line of discourse. I don't think so. And a big part of the strikes right now is that we are dealing with tech companies in this. These are not just studios. We're dealing with Netflix, which is a tech company.
Yeah.
It's not really a proper studio. You're dealing with Amazon, who doesn't care about its film and TV development. And if it doesn't make money on that side, they don't care because that's 5% of the money they make. And Apple, who, you know, they are a tech company. They are not an entertainment studio. They're fine dragging this out as long as possible because all they really care about is their streaming services in the case of Netflix and, you know, getting people to buy their other products and things of that nature. They don't care as much about the entertainment side of things, at least as much as like a Warner Brothers needs to care about it or a Universal needs to care. I just don't see these CEOs caring about the industry. I mean, I'm not going to pretend like in the 1940s and the olden days of Hollywood that there was a purity of artistic vision running these studios. Like, that's definitely not the case. They were still, you know, cheap, and they would still pinch every penny possible and exploit the heck out of people. But at least back then, there was a feeling of art. There was a feeling of, I am creating something that, you know, will hopefully be meaningful. And I don't think there's any of that right now with these CEOs. I just think they just view this as an industry they can, you know, scrap for parts, break apart a union, and make it cheaper for the next CEOs down the line.
Well, and it's interesting that you make that distinction, because that is true, right? Like, for some of the companies that are Netflix, they're still, their product is still the content that they put out, unlike Amazon and Apple. But we saw with A24, which, if people listening are not familiar, is a incredible independent studio that makes some of the
light, everything everywhere all at once.
Yes, every kind of like indie, cool, gritty film that you gets nominated. Like, I feel like every year they have at least one thing that's nominated for Best Picture.
They've become like a genre on themselves.
Yes, and
like,
they're incredible. Yeah. But they've come to terms with at least SAG. I don't know if it's also with the writers, but at least with SAG, that they have met as a small independent studio comparatively to big mm-hmm. networks. They have been able to say, we can meet your demands with SAG. And so do you think there becomes different studios that break off? Or I don't really know the structure of AMPTP of like, that's possible. But do you think that for different studios that aren't tech companies, that they're like, I don't want to go down, like, that they don't want to go down this road?
I think, and it's important to note, I don't think A24 has signed a full-on deal with the actors and the writers. I believe it's the waivers. Like, if you're wondering why you're seeing some movies and TV shows, if you're seeing some movies still going into production and things like that, a lot of those are A24 movies, and they're signing individual production waivers for those. But those waivers do mean that they are working by the guidelines of the deals that SAG and the WGA want. So, like, they are working under what they are trying to get from the major studios. I just don't see that happening, a studio breaking off. If it were, it would have to be someone like an A24, like a small independent studio that has the muscle and the prestige and the reputation that could pull off a move like that. It would be groundbreaking. It would be historic, and it would move A24 back up to, it would move A24 up to the level of like a Universal and a Warner Brothers. Because you're striking all of those studios. Come work for us. But until that officially gets signed, but these studios they work together, and these are rich dudes trying to defend their rich coffers, and trying to defend their money losing streaming services, and they will be damned if they have to release any of their streaming information and make it easier to negotiate residuals and easier to negotiate contracts. It's an existential strike right now. This is not just about money. This is about how this industry, how actors and writers and directors will be paid for their work from here until the next strike, until the next big technological entertainment revolution. And they don't want to pay more than they deem fit. And unfortunately, what they deem fit is very little.
Womp womp.
Yeah. Yay.
That's the big bummer about Barbenheimer is we had this big weekend, the fourth highest opening weekend in history, combined in terms of money. The highest weekend since Avengers Endgame. And the next week, we're talking about studios pulling movies off of the schedule because the actors can't do press tours for them.
Exactly.
And you know, hey, welcome back to theaters. Sure hope this lasts. Like, sure hope there's some new stuff for you to see in a few months. It's going to keep going. I mean, they just moved the Emmys this week.
Yep, I saw that.
Those got pushed. Yeah. That got pushed probably to January. Yeah, sorry. Sorry to end on a bummer note.
Well, have fun on your Miller Boys baseball tour. Matt Miller is the culture editor for On Milwaukee. Always fun to have you here. We'll see you next month. Have a great weekend.
Thanks for having me.
All right. If you would like to win some State Fair tickets, call us now, 844-967-2789. That's 844-96-PARTY. And we will play a little game with you. This is As Goes Wisconsin. Welcome back to As Goes Wisconsin. I am Kristen Bry. She is Jane Madnair. And this show has flown by.
It really did. Woo-wee. It really did. It was great to have Maggie here.
Oh my God. So easy to talk to.
Yeah, she's brilliant.
Just could talk to her all day. We decided that the three of us could go out and solve a lot of the world's problems.
Oh.
Or at least some problems in our worlds.
Absolutely. Just give us the power. It'll be fine.
It will be fine.
It'll all be fine.
All right. Well, we are once again giving away some State Fair tickets because the State Fair starts next Thursday. It's here, baby people. And we have come up with a game that is similar to, a fun game that's usually played with celebrities as far as which one you would like to fornicate with, which one you'd like to marry, and which one you'd like to kill. But this is, we're giving you three new food items you can get at the State Fair.
Yep.
And one you have to choose that is something you will eat all of it, but you only have to do it once. One you have to eat for the rest of your life, and one you never get to eat and you have to banish it to hell. And who is our contestant today, Jane?
We have Mike on the line from Milwaukee. Hey, Mike, how you doing?
Great. How are you ladies today?
We are great. We're ready.
Good.
Ready for the weekend, Mike. All right. Are you ready to hear your options and which ones you have to... You have to pick one for each category. You understand the rules?
I'm not sure I can be as good as Richard from yesterday, but I'll try my best.
All right. Well, I'm glad you were listening yesterday. All right. So your first option, the Brat and Kraut Cheese Curd Taco at Richie's Cheese Curd Tacos, consisting of a Johnsonville Brat Bites, cheddar cheese curds, sauerkraut, and beer and brat mustard in a fried flour tortilla. So that is your first option.
Sounds good.
Your second option is an Oreo crumble cookie dough on a stick that will be at Cora's Cookie Dough. I think it's supposed to be fried. I think it's fried Oreo crumble cookie dough on a stick. And your last one is bug chow mein. Bug chow mein. So yes, this is one of the bug dishes that will be at Exotic Meat. So which one are you eating all of it at once? Once for the rest of the once every day for the rest of your life, or one that you're not going to eat at all and banish to hell.
Banish. What kind of bugs are we talking about here?
I don't know.
Is that the qualifier for you, Mike?
Is that a consideration?
I need to know what kind of bugs they are.
So you'll do grasshoppers, but not ants.
All right, here we go. I got the description. Bug chow mein. Bug chow mein is swarming with insects that'll satisfy your bug craving, because we all have one of those.
Oh, yeah.
Teriyaki noodles are mixed with sautéed edible bugs like crickets, worms, ants, June bugs, and juicy sago worms.
Ugh.
Served with soy sauce, duck sauce, and a fortune cookie for your dining pleasure.
Juicy worm.
And there is, the picture is not appetizing.
Oh, man.
See, that's what I needed. So I'm going to go with, I'll eat that once.
You'll eat that once. Wow. Adventurous.
Bug chow mein. Oh, man.
Yeah, we'll try the bugs out.
All right.
We're going to banish to hell the fried Oreos and a stick, because you just shouldn't mess with Oreos. They're good as is.
Okay.
So So that meat leaves the winner for a lifetime bratkraut tortilla.
You're going to eat that every day for the rest of your life.
Yeah, there's cheese curds in there. Why not?
The curds solve everything.
The curds and the brats every day for the rest of your life. Just so, such a cliche, Mike from Milwaukee. All right. Well, stay on the line. Jane is going to get your information so we can get you your tickets for the Wisconsin State Fair. Thank you for calling and thank you for listening, Mike.
Have a good day.
You too.
Don't hang up. I need your, okay. I need your stuff. We will have more tickets too.
We have more tickets. So we are going to be doing this Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, all next week. We'll probably play more than once because we have a lot of tickets. I think we had over 25. We gave two to Richard
yesterday.
We'll give two to Mike.
Yep.
But if you would like to play, it's obviously very fun and very simple.
And you can't lose.
And you can't lose. All you have to do is make the hard choices. And
decisions.
I am the thing that I want to do. I want to go to State Fair and make some content of trying a lot of these foods. It's just really expensive.
It's not like they have a sample day.
You know
what I mean? If they had like, you know, teeny portions where you could get a taste of it for $2, you know, but
to buy the, cause it's like, I just will get full. I mean, this kid's starting to take up a lot of space in, in my torso and like, you know, there's only so much I can eat. Speaking of this kid, I learned how to give birth. I went to my first and only birthing class last night at Sinai.
Oh, really?
So yeah. So I know a little bit more about labor.
Do you feel better about it now?
Sure. I mean, yeah, I know a little bit more about like, all right, so what does inducing actually mean? I saw the facility, you know, you saw the labor and delivery floor.
Okay.
Mike was with me and we, there's like a hydrotherapy tub. And of course he asked, he's like, well, are the support partners allowed to use this?
I don't think so.
And, but yeah, so that was, It's happening.
It is. It's coming pretty quickly, my friend.
Yeah. And so it was one of those things. I think this weekend is going to be spent finally sitting still and doing stuff around the house. Be like, what do we have to get done in the next 2 months before this kid shows up? Because I think the list is a lot longer than we.
Is the nursery?
No.
Oh. Yeah. Your mother hasn't come down, swooped in, and
she has things picked out, but it's not set up yet. And so
you may want to get on that.
We may get on that this weekend. There may be some rearranging, some list making, starting to actually figure out what needs to happen over the next 6 weeks.
You're going
to
need some supplies.
Because he's getting back surgery.
That's right.
And I'm probably sooner rather than later going to be big enough where it's like, I don't want to be doing any of that stuff. So we gotta get on it. What are you doing this weekend?
I am... We are going to dinner at a friend's tomorrow.
Fun.
Yeah. So I have to go grocery shopping, go pick up some, I'm making appetizers, mushroom onion tartlets.
Nice. Woo-woo. Not Fig Newtons.
They are not Fig Newtons. And someone actually texted in and suggested frozen Oreos.
Instead of Fig Newtons. Double stuffed?
They did not specify.
Let us know. Double stuffed, single stuffed, or fried on a stick.
All the important things. You can always let us know at 844-967-2789, or you can email us too at asgoeswisconsin.com.
asgoeswisconsin at civicmedia.us.
There you go.
Thank you to Maggie Dawn for spending such a chunk of time with us today. It was super fun. Listen to her show Monday through Thursday on Civic Media at 6 p.m. Thank you to Matt Miller, who joins us once a month to give us his pop culture takes. And thank you to people who called and people who texted and being part of the show. We will be back on Monday at 10 a.m. when we will do this all over again. This has been As Goes Wisconsin. Just a matter of taste. Stop telling me the way that I gotta play. You put too much food.